This is Where We Live.
I can't help but wonder who would have thought that a daughter of a Teamster and a railroad porter would have the chance to serve as mayor of a place as wonderful as New Haven.
That's New Haven's mayor-elect Toni Harp celebrating her election as the city's first ever female mayor last night. Harp's 10-point victory over fellow Democrat Justin Elliker wasn't a big surprise, but there were surprises aplenty on a night that proves we can draw no larger trends about national politics from municipal races. We saw some big upsets in New Britain and Ansonia for Republicans, an impressive win in Stamford by a Democrat, and the takeover of a school board in Bridgeport by the Working Families Party in an election that's seen by some as a proxy war in a national fight over school reform. Today, Where We Live, it's our weekly news roundtable, The Wheelhouse, and we'll be wheeling around the state looking at results from yesterday. And we want to hear from you. What was the big election news in your town? How was the turnout in your town as well? We want to hear your reports from the field. Join us 860-275-7266. Again, 860-275-7266. And you can also email us where we live at WNPR.org. Tweet us at where we live. Joining me first is Colin McEnroe, of course, the host of the Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR. How's it going, Colin?
Good morning, Mr. Dankowski. I took a little Dramamine because of all this wheeling around.
There's a lot
sometimes
of
sometimes can get a little lightheaded.
There's a little bit of wheeling around today. Just settle your stomach and let's go through some of this. What are the big takeaways for you from yesterday?
Well, I think you're right that there's not a lot that's construable on a major level from what goes on in local politics. Local politics is all about local issues and local rivalries, pettiness, people getting mad at other people. You see things that are startling, but I think they're startling only at the local level. So, I mean, just, you know, New Britain might be the big surprise of the night, although New Britain should never be a surprise because it has an incredibly volatile political climate. The Democratic coalition there is easily fracturable because it's really composed of at least two major elements. And what we had there was a 26-year-old Aaron Stewart, who is the daughter of the former mayor, beating Tim O'Brien. And, you know, O'Brien, actually, you know, pretty strong politician, longtime legislator, turned mayor. But there was clearly a lot of volatility in New Britain. And, you notice little things. Like, there's a guy named Danny Salerno who's, like, he's worked on all the Democratic campaigns. He ran as a Republican this time and won at the council level. So you sort of notice stuff like that. You think, well, something's going on there. And maybe the other surprise sort of – it's not really a surprise, but Stamford reverted to a Democratic mayor. Stamford's registration and composition would sort of argue for a Democratic mayor. They didn't have one last time around. If you look at their board of – their enormous board of representatives, they have 40 people on their board of representatives. It's 27 Democrats and 13 Republicans as of this morning.
So, and we're going to be talking about both of those races a little bit more later on in the program. Again, we want to hear from you at 860-275-7266. The biggest city that was up for grabs, at least the one that we've been paying the most attention to here on WNPR, is New Haven. And Paul Bass, the editor of the New Haven Independent, joins us to talk about Toni Harp's fairly handy win over Justin Elliker. Paul, as always, welcome back to our show.
Thank you, John. Pleasure to be on.
So I guess the first thing is, you know, this is a 10-point victory. This seems like a fairly large margin. But in the Independent, you know, you said Justin Elliker put up a good fight. How do you break this down?
I actually think, John, that there were two winners and one loser last night in New Haven. Harp is clearly a big winner. First woman, first African-American woman to be the mayor in the city in its history. She brought together a big coalition. And she won, as you said, by a real margin. She definitely won. It wasn't any mistake about it. She had support throughout the city. It was 54 to 45, but there were more voters than there usually are in city elections. There were over 20,000 voters. And the huge surprise is how well Elliker did, because he got almost 10,000 votes. And he, he's someone who ran for office with only 4 years of experience in New Haven politics, only 6 years of running the city. And he put a hand behind his back. He voluntarily entered the public financing process in New Haven. And in the general election, when he was no longer eligible to get matching funds, he continued to. So as he said last night, he proved that a viable candidate can run on public financing and be in the mix. Now, the big loser last night, John, I think, was Governor Dan Malloy. He practically moved in here the way Chris Murphy practically moved in when he ran the Senate. You know, they feel that New Haven's the big cache of votes for the big margin of victory he got for governor when he ran last time was here. And they feel that the Yale unions, which are the biggest political force in town and have taken control of the Board of Aldermen with their back candidates, he's been wooing them. He needs them to win a tough re-election fight. So he's been backing Harp all the time down here. He's even been spotted at Adriana, this classy Italian restaurant, hobnobbing with the union people in the middle of the day, privately. And the strong showing by Elliker reflects a big part of the voters here, many of whom are Democrats, who were upset about Malloy's role and also embrace a set of issues, a skepticism of established institutions like party organizations and labor unions, who will not be as reliable a vote for him next time. They're up for grabs with the Republican candidate. That said, the biggest win of the night was for Toni Harp. It's a capstone to a career after 21 years in the state Senate. She parlayed decades worth of positive experiences with people she's fought for in Hartford. And despite the nastiness that comes at the end of any campaign, what you saw was those two people as they really were last night. It was very positive, inspiring people to make the city better, pledging to work together while still caring about their issues. So all in all, after 20 years of having the same mayor in New Haven who worked hard and had one style, New Haven did have an opening this year, a Democratic opening. It was positive, over 17 debates at least. And in the end, it was a night where democracy triumphed.
Paul, it's Colin. First of all, I agree with everything you say. And I was really surprised by that 45% for Elliker. And I'm assuming that what that means also, given the fact that he had almost every possible structural disadvantage and Harp had every advantage, it suggests there are a lot of people in New Haven who aren't happy with business as usual, with establishment politics, with anything that resembles machine politics, that in future elections, their voices will be heard even louder.
Right, and the person who gets identified as the number one representative of that is Dan Malloy for that voter. Colin, I think the other thing going on besides the negative is that New Haven has had a renewal, a renaissance in the last bunch of years. And a lot of people have either moved in or moved back who are middle class or educated or embrace the sort of NGO, non-governmental organization, bike walk to work ethos, the environmental ethos, farmers markets. Those were the voters Elliker spoke to. They're growing, and they will be a bigger force in New Haven, and you'll see it more around the state and some of the cities, too.
We're talking with Paul Bass, the editor of the New Haven Independent. We're going to be wheeling around the state here on the Wheelhouse today, taking a look at municipal elections. If you want to join us, 860-275-7266. In the town right next to New Haven, in East Haven, Joe Maturo won once again.
East Haven voters, they go with their guy. They went with their gut, and Maturo harped on the money factor, on his finance management factor, on the fact that property taxes have gone down for 70% of the homeowners. Maybe that resonated. East Haven is a different animal, though, as we've clearly seen.
That's our friend Evan Lips from the New Haven Register talking this morning on WNPR's Morning Edition. Paul Bass, quickly, what's your takeaway from this? Yes, indeed, East Haven is a little bit of a different animal.
As you know, when we were on last week talking about this, John, I believe the key election for East Haven was the primary, because East Haven is a town that's changing painfully, but slowly but surely. In the town had fought the Justice Department, trying to clean up the town, stop the corrupt police force that was brutalizing people of color. And in the primary, you had a cop who's always been part of that dishonest, brutal police force, trying a last gasp at power, running for office, promising to continue in fighting the changes brought by the Justice Department, fighting the changing, slowly, slightly changing complexion of the town. And he lost to someone with no experience in the primary. What happened in general is that Joe Maturo got reelected, but he got reelected because he clearly is more in touch with the average voter. And his evolution over the last 2 years reflects an evolution of the town. In that 2 years ago, he was fighting the Justice Department. He came in and kept the corrupt police chief the Justice Department was trying to get rid of. He said they weren't going to comply. 2 years later, to win his office, he had to be the candidate who was reluctantly changing with the times. That's why, because don't forget, East Haven voted for President Obama, whose Justice Department made the changes happen. So I actually thought I have a different take on that election, East Haven, than others. I think it reflects the way that the center has moved.
Colin?
Yeah, I had the opposite take, but I always feel that the height of arrogance is to, you know, for me to try to figure out what's going on in somebody's town where I don't live or spend any time. But certainly from the outside looking in, it does, you know, there's an old saying that every bad marriage needs a common enemy. it seemed as though for Maturo and the voters, the common enemy maybe was the Department of Justice. Just maybe in terms of energizing people. people. I mean, these elections, Paul, they all run on pretty low turnout. So the question is, you know, what can people get, you know, revved up about? And you know, Stacey, maybe not the most dynamic candidate in the world, maybe not the most energizing candidate in the world, but Maturo could sort of do that you and me against the world thing where the voters, that may have helped him anyway.
But I don't think he did that this time, Colin. I think he did it 2 years ago.
I don't think he needed to say it, though.
This time it was about taxes, I think.
Mm.
He's kept taxes down, and I think there's almost an exhaustion factor.
Although, hasn't he done that through a lot of borrowing, too? I mean, isn't that right. One of the ways that East Haven taxes stay down, which is tons of financing?
Right, but on your first point, Colin, he did not run this time as resisting the Tartar injustice. He ran this time as going along with them, which was a big change from 2 years ago.
But Paul Bass is editor of the New Haven Independent. He's, of course, been covering these races for us all along. Paul, thanks so much for joining us, as always.
Well, it's always great being with you smart guys.
Oh, yeah. Well, right. You're the smart guy. He's covering everything down there. 860-275-7266 as we wheel around the straight. Before we move on from the Havens, West Haven had an election yesterday, too, Colin.
Yeah, once again, I don't feel qualified to talk about very many of these things. But, of course, I'm, as a pop culture fan, attracted to any kind of Star Trek election. And this one, O'Brien beat Picard, which is not the way things are supposed to work. Picard's supposed to outrank Chief O'Brien. My understanding, I'm just doing this from memory right now. I believe actually what happened there was that they're both Democrats. O'Brien won the primary. Picard ran as a write-in candidate, a la Mike Jarjura, basically. You have an incumbent running as a write-in candidate. He didn't do as well as Jarjura did. He lost by a few hundred votes.
In just a couple of minutes, we're going to be bringing in Denise Merrill. She's the Secretary of the State to talk about overall voter turnout in these municipal elections, and we want to hear from you at 860-275-7266. What were the big issues in your town? Maybe some ballot questions that we want to tackle. And you can also tell us, I don't know, if you ran for some sort of seat and you won yesterday. We'd love to hear from you. 860-275-7266. But next, let's turn to Stanford.
We started off knowing it was going to be close, but we never took our eye off the ball. And I thank you so much for helping carry us forward to that victory.
I hope that you will all join me in congratulating David on his victory. And I look forward to continuing our lives here in the city of Stanford and with all of you as our friends.
That's David Martin, who's been elected as the new mayor of Stanford, and Michael Fedeli, the Republican, the former lieutenant governor, who lost by about 7 points. We're going to bring in Kate King, who's a staff writer who covers government and politics for the Stanford Advocate. Kate, welcome to our show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So what do you take away from this win?
Well, the Democrats are back in control, not just in the mayor's office, but on all three elected boards. So I think David Martin really has wide latitude to lead his agenda going forward.
A lot of people here in Hartford and around the state would say this must say something about state politics. Of course, Governor Malloy was the mayor of Stanford for quite some time. Does it say anything about the state politics? Does it say anything about Dana Malloy, or is this just really about the Democrats who were on the ballot in Stanford yesterday?
I've been thinking about that. I don't think it's connected so much to Malloy, since, after all, David Martin was kind of his second choice in this election. He had initially endorsed State Representative William Tong. So Malloy did eventually throw his support behind Martin, but I think this really speaks to the work of the Martin campaign and the just overall dominance of Democrats in Stanford.
You know, Colin, listening to Paul Bass talk about how yesterday was a bad day for Dana Malloy in New Haven, even though he backed Tony Harp, who won, and then looking at what he did in Stanford, how he got out behind William Tong, who wasn't even on the ballot yesterday. I mean, can we learn anything from this, Colin?
Yeah, I keep walking with little cat feet on this whole question. You know, I mean, there's no way that yesterday could be construed as a good day for Dana Malloy. In other words, notwithstanding the Harp victory, and looking at Stanford, where, as everybody's saying, he endorsed Tong, not Martin. You could probably throw Tim O'Brien into the mix too, another person that Malloy backed. It's hard to sort of look anywhere and say, well, he really had a good day there. But for the most part, governors don't have that much of an impact on local races. It's why they shouldn't get involved, because they can't really have an impact. And then when they get involved and then things don't go their way, they look stupid.
It could really only be bad. You know, one of the things, Kate, that we've been following here that I would love you to weigh in on is this plan to build a massive headquarters for the hedge fund Bridgewater. It's been big news for us. It's something we've been following. It's a plan pushed by Governor Malloy, of course, and it's opposed by many in the town of Stanford. Does this election tell us anything about what is likely to happen with that plan?
Yes, I think it's going to be much more challenging for Bridgewater to go forward under David Martin compared to if Michael Fedeli had won, because Michael Fedeli was at least initially, extremely supportive of the plan to bring Bridgewater to that particular piece of property, whereas David Martin said the plan in its current form, if it came before him until he was elected mayor, he was on the Board of Finance. If it came before him, he would vote against it. So David Martin does want to bring Bridgewater to Sanford, but he wants to make sure Bridgewater gives a little bit more than they're offering to Sanford citizens first.
Hey, and the last thing, and we know money in politics doesn't always mean that anyone wins, but it seems though Michael Fedeli did a little bit better job raising money than David Martin. Should we learn anything from that, or just that Michael Fedeli's a little bit better known and able to reach into people's pocketbooks?
Right. I think Michael Fedeli's fundraising power is just based on the people he knows and the strength of his fundraising. But David Martin overcame two better-funded opponents in this election. William Tong vastly out-fundraised him in the primary, and then Michael Fedeli also was ahead in the general election. So I think it just shows in local politics, at least in Sanford still, it's more about the candidates than the money at this point.
Kate King is a staff writer who covers government and politics for the Stanford Advocate. Kate, thanks so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Let's go to Laura quickly, who's calling from East Haven. Hi there, Laura. You're on Where We Live.
Hi. I'm calling from East Haven, and I just wanted to – I caught the tail end of the conversation that you were having about our election here, and I just wanted to kind of weigh in. I am a lifelong Democrat, but voted Republican yesterday simply because there's a lot of divisive figures in the Democratic Party, the local Democratic Party here in East Haven, that really I'm speaking for myself, but I'm guessing that a lot of people don't want to see them back in power. They're holdovers from the last administration, and they make a lot of noise. They seem to stir up a lot of trouble, and I prefer that we stay away from those types of people. And they actually polled when they were surveying to see Maturo's campaign, polled and named names in the telephone polls, asking for people, how would you feel knowing that this person was behind the, you know, Democratic candidate Jack Stacy?
So
I think that's a lot of it.
Laura, thank you very much for that, Colin.
Sounds a little bit like a push pull, actually, but I don't have any other comment about it other than that. Once again, I think calls like this though kind of illustrate the difficulty of reporting on somebody's local politics from a vantage point 50 miles away. You just don't know these things, and what she says is certainly plausible, at least for a certain number of voters. Who knows how many?
Well, Laura, thank you very much for that. And if you want to join us to talk about what happened in your town yesterday, 860-275-7266. Colin McEnroe is here with me in the wheelhouse as always. When we come back, Secretary of the State Denise Merrill will be here to talk about the voter turnout in yesterday's municipal elections. Some low numbers in some parts of the state. I think we can safely say some pretty low numbers. Some other places in which there is a little bit more excitement. We want you to join us. 860-275-7266. This is Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up tomorrow night, I hope that you can join us as we present the second in our series of conversations about health equity in the state with the Connecticut Health Foundation. We're going to be talking about health equity through the lens of the Affordable Care Act. We'll be answering a lot of your questions, and hopefully you can join us at our Hartford studios at the WNPR CPTV building. If you want to find out how to register, just go to the WNPR Facebook page. Today, it's Wednesday, which means the wheelhouse, and we're wheeling around the state trying to find out what happened yesterday in municipal elections. Colin McEnroe, as always, the host of the Colin McEnroe Show, is with us. We're going to be talking more about the New Britain race in just a moment and getting to some more of your phone calls, but I want to welcome in the Secretary of the State of Connecticut, Denise Merrill. Hello there, Denise, and thank you so much for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me again.
So I guess the first thing is first, you don't have the overall numbers as far as turnout. Do you have any sense of how many people turned out yesterday to vote in municipal elections?
Yeah, sadly, I would stick with my prediction that it'll be even maybe slightly lower than usual. Usual turnout in a local election year is about 30%, give or take, and it may be even lower than that. But, you know, it varies widely, obviously, by town.
Oh, we heard in Hartford turnout was something like 5%.
Right. Well, there were no real I mean, there was one school board race, but other than that, you know, no big races in Hartford and three ballot questions, which were a little confusing to people, I think.
Well, as a matter of fact, we got a tweet from Cosmo here who says, I consider myself good at reading. I would not have been able to make sense of the ballot questions without knowing the questions going in. And that really is one of the problems. One of these had to do with the registrar voters. I mean, you'd have to explain to people what a registrar does, why there's right. three of them in Hartford, why we pay these people to do this work. And then there's a question about professionalizing them. I mean, I don't know anybody, myself included, who could figure that out literally and make sense of that. Is there any standardization of how we write these ballot questions?
No, not really. And that's part of the problem. I mean, in this case, all three I thought were almost unfathomable, even for me. And I vote in Hartford. And I did know kind of what the issues were going in. But yeah, that was a huge problem. And it goes to the whole issue of voter confusion generally. People don't like to feel silly, you know, and not that they don't know what's going on when they go in the ballot and to vote. And I think that's part of what happens in local elections, you know.
I kind of wish that when they do charter revision next time around, one of the things they ought to revise is this particular thing that they do in Bridgeport and Hartford, where they don't vote on the same cycles as everybody else, and they split up their cycles. I mean, if you want to depress turnout, if you want to have really embarrassing low turnout, take a couple of things like Board of Education and some ballot questions and break them away from the rest of your political process, which has lousy turnout anyway under the best of circumstances.
Well, and it's not a small point. It doesn't cost nothing to hold an election in a city like Hartford or Bridgeport. It costs something. I don't know what the overall numbers are, but we're spending money to essentially have a couple hundred people come out and vote.
They didn't use up a lot of ink yesterday anyway.
Yeah, there's that. Lauren from Griswold has a question that I think we might address to you, Denise Merrill. Hi, Lauren. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, what's on your mind?
I'm calling from the humble little town of Griswold, Connecticut, in eastern Connecticut. And there was some problem with our voting yesterday, apparently something with the count of the new register of the votes and the count itself didn't match. The Norwich Bulletin did not make that clear. In fact, it was very confusing, and we could not make heads or tails of what exactly did happen. But essentially, apparently, the Republican candidate got one more vote than the Democratic candidate, and then the Democratic candidate got 12 more votes than the Republican candidate.
That is confusing. How are Griswold's math scores on state mastery tests? That sounds like, well, we should just ask Denise generally, do you know about recounts? It looked like in New London, maybe they might have a little recount brewing in one of their...
Yeah, don't forget, we don't have all the returns right. in yet. They have until 5 o'clock today to get them in. And so a lot of this is handled locally. We only step in when there's an issue. I don't know if we stepped in Griswold last night, but those things do happen.
I'm very worried about Griswold.
Well, she called the humble little town. I feel bad for Griswold. Lauren, thank you very much for your question. When you say that not all the returns are in, Denise Mel, if we're looking at your site, you know, people were trying to find out the election results last night, the Secretary of the State site, there's a lot of good information. But when you click on a town to find out the results, sometimes you see what look like PDFs of the back of a cocktail napkin, of
right.
just people scrawling with crayon the numbers. Is this really the way it works? You guys get these papers in here faxed into you or something through this arcane system?
This is actually an improvement. We've never even tried to do that before.
Yeah.
This is the first year we decided to give up on the idea of having, they all fax these things in or they have the state police deliver them, believe it or not. We have a new program that will enable them, 40 towns theoretically, used the new program, which basically you fill in the numbers, you push the button, it goes to us. Nobody has to re-input it or anything. It's great. But change is tough in Connecticut. So
in Bridgeport, they ran out of cocktail napkins.
So that's why, in despair, in a way, we decided to just put up PDFs of the things we were getting because it's a lot quicker, but it's still...
But it's also telling, and I would just say, I think people should actually take a look at this. Go to the Secretary of the State's site and look at the local town results because you actually see how it's done. In my town of Winchester, I was looking for the results, and they had hand-drawn lines, and you couldn't necessarily... tell. It was like grading a high school math paper. You couldn't quite tell which numbers lined up with which names. It's quite remarkable that this is what you have to parse.
That's exactly right. And that's why there have been errors, you know, when we transpose these numbers, because they get transposed three different times. We have to retype them in. You can imagine the amount of error that's possible there.
Okay, let's go to Martha, who's calling from Hartford. Martha, hi, what's on your mind?
Hi. I had the experience of being not only a voter yesterday, but a brand new moderator. I'm a lifelong third party voter and former political candidate, and I have things to say about the charter charter change issues and the registrar's office and so forth. And I don't hardly know where to start. What would you be most interested in?
Well,
my experiences yesterday as a moderator, my opinions about the whole questions. But overall, I have a big concern about government transparency and the process.
Well, Colin, what do you think?
Well, first of all, what is that concern that you have? What's your concern about transparency?
My concern, everybody knows that there's no turnout in Hartford for elections, municipal elections in general, and especially this election being just Board of Ed candidates. People don't come out and vote. Would the U.S. government make a change in the Congress, in the Constitution, by a process that only engaged 5% of the voters?
No, I'm with you. I mean,
that's a great question.
Would the U.S. government make a big change in the Constitution without an openly discussed and aired and vetted by the public, so the public all understands and the media all talks about, and everybody fully, thoroughly, as much as possible as he can possibly get involved, knows about changes being considered?
It's a good question.
Martha, I think you have moderator PTSD, but I don't blame you. You know, I think this is—it's troubling. I mean, like any election in Hartford is troubling. The turnout's never really what's warranted for a city election, and I do think bifurcating them the way they do just exacerbates the problem.
I would just point out quickly that many towns have a provision that at least 15% of the registered voters must be voting in order to pass such a thing. Hartford apparently does not have that provision. Maybe that's something we should look at because it seems sensible.
And you had to do that, you'd have to do charter reform, you know, and then you would only get 5% of the people to vote on it, so it would be fundamentally flawed.
But that really is the question, right? In order to even have a system that would work, you'd have to get enough people interested in changing the system.
That's right.
We're talking with Denise Merrill, the Secretary of the State, Colin McEnroe, the host of the Colin McEnroe Show, and we're taking your calls at 860-275-7266. One of the big upsets yesterday was Aaron Stewart, a 26-year-old Republican, winning in New Britain.
It feels amazing. I am so happy that I was able to spread my message of independent voting and progress over politics to the New Britain voters, and they really saw it through. They wanted change. They wanted a new generation of leadership, and this was the generation they wanted, and I am so proud and so happy to be our new mayor.
Again, that's Erin Stewart celebrating her victory over Tim O'Brien. Joining us now is Diane Alverio. She's the publisher of CT Latino News and a longtime observer of things going on in New Britain. Diane, welcome to the show.
Good morning, John. I have to tell you, being a longtime New Britainite as well, the best online comment I saw regarding the race here was the only ones that are stunned by the election results are the media. And that really reflects what took place here. I was surprised watching everyone stunned. There, you know, the discontent has been brewing for quite a while here in New Britain with O'Brien's administration. And, you know, a lot of it had to do with the people who he surrounded himself with. And at times when they were controversies, he had a spokesperson, his chief of staff, speaking, and he didn't speak out. That combined with, you know, constant bickering on the council, some childish tactics during the campaign, using old Facebook pictures. You know, the voters, you know, you could really tell are really exhausted with that, are tired of that. And, you know, Aaron pushed a bipartisan coalition. Colin, you mentioned Danny Salerno, long-term Democrat. He's still a Democrat. But, you know, he had been excluded by the established Democrats here. He had run so many times. So, you know, I personally am glad, and I think a lot of voters are glad, that he's going to go in there and, you know, he's an independent thinker and shake things up. Aaron put together this bipartisan coalition that appealed to the voters. You know, the voters were looking for an alternative here in Britain.
Well, now, when you say old Facebook photos that were used in this campaign, I mean, just understand, we're talking about someone who was in CCSU in 2009. And this is someone who does not have a whole lot of political experience. This is someone who's brand new to politics. I mean, And you know, at the end of his term, her her father, Tim Stewart, wasn't exactly the most popular guy in New Britain. I mean, is anybody going to expect that she's going to continue on in his footsteps, Diane?
You know, she is 26 years old. She is the daughter of a former mayor, as, you know, a lot of folks here saw. People were looking for an alternative, I'm telling you, here in New Britain, because of a lot that's been going on. And, you know, people are worried about taxes, economic development. I mean, you know, around the water cooler, on the street corner, they're talking about schools. And so when, you know, Facebook pictures or whatever the ridiculousness is, people are tired, as they are, tired of what's going on in Washington, tired of the partisan bickering. That's what I'm observing. That's what we're seeing here. And so she was the fresh alternative. And she did bring in a lot of young folks to the process. Her treasurer was a 26-year-old who she knew from high school days. All of these young people who just became energized. And voters are looking for, you know, other options these days, John. You know that.
And we were talking with Diane Alverio, publisher of CT Latino News, and talking about the New Britain race. We're seeing it as a big upset. She's saying it's not such a big upset. This is, you know, obviously, Colin, you know, when we talk about these things, Diane's talking about some of the same things you're talking about in East Haven. Taxes are very important. Yes, this is a local issue, but in many ways, it's also a state and a federal issue, too. People feel crushed by government, and to a certain extent, they're taking it out on the local level. They can't really seem to do much about it on the federal level or the state level.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm very reluctant to extrapolate from local to, I mean, so much of these things really are very, very specifically local. And you can kind of look around the state and see other municipalities, other cities making radically different kinds of decisions just in terms of choices of parties. So I'm not sure what all that means. I know New Britain is just a chronically fractious town. You know, it really is sort of a place where you have these kinds of disputes and you have these kind of shifting coalitions. So I think it's a little bit more that than part of some national trend about taxes.
You know, Diane Alverio, before I let you go, when we were talking about Stamford, one of the questions I had for Kate King was about what's going to happen with the big redevelopment of the waterfront in Stamford with a brand new mayor. My question for New Britain is, you know, we've got CT Fast Track, what everyone knows as the busway, coming in. It's been very, very contentious, but it's supposed to lead to a type of a renaissance in downtown New Britain. If done right, there's going to be high-density construction. People are going to be living in New Britain and traveling into Hartford. Does this election maybe say anything about what the future of New Britain is going to look like in downtown?
You know, I would tell you that voters and residents in New Britain would say, from your mouth to God's ears, there's always a new idea, not just in New Britain, in Hartford and in many urban areas, trying to redevelop, trying to move on. So, and you're right, this fast track, this bus thing has been very divisive. Folks around here have looked at it, rolled their eyes, and thought, okay, here we go again. There go my tax dollars. You know, voters are looking for solid, not pie in the sky, and I'm not suggesting that that's what that is, but solid tax base, economic development, city services, you know, just the same basic things. And let me just add one other thing, John.
Sure.
You know, there are a lot of independent voters, independent thinkers. You know, one of the big stories or, you know, discussions among the neighbors and people here who you'd run into and talk politics when the Democratic chair, Nancy DiNardo, and that's her role, obviously, dismissed Aaron Stewart's candidacy, saying she's the daughter of. Well, you know, she's 26 years old. She's a young woman. So it was very offensive to people. But beyond that, and Colin, you said it well, you're very reluctant to talk about towns you haven't been in. And, you know, I think people feel that way. Nancy DiNardo, the question people were talking about is, what does she know about our town? When was the last time she was here? And why is she attacking a young woman? So, you know, it's that sort of. And maybe that is not hardcore politics, but, you know, when people take pride in where they live and see others attacking and dismissing people that voters might think, gosh, they're providing an alternative for us, then they're, you know, you get offended by it.
Diane Alverio is publisher of CT Latino News. Diane, as always, good to talk to you.
Likewise.
And you know, one of the things she just mentioned, independent voters, and we always talk about independent voters, Denise Merrill, when we're talking about a statewide election. We don't really talk about independent voters at the municipal level. What can you tell us about independent voters getting engaged on a day like yesterday?
Well, first of all, there's a distinction between independent voters and unaffiliated voters.
Yes, I understand. And those two things are confused.
Right,
I think we know what
right.
we mean. Independent voters are, in our minds, are people who are not affiliated with either major party, but
right.
indeed independent is a party in and of itself.
Yes. But
so
as far as the
voters.
Unaffiliated voters, they're a growing number. You know, more and more people are just not joining either party. They're very suspicious of party. But that leaves them, to some extent, a little adrift, because then you have to start knowing every single person on the ballot and what they stand for and what their issues are. And then that's when they stop voting, frankly, because you can't know that much about everybody unless you're really following politics. So I always think of parties as those that package ideas. And people are suspicious of that now. They don't know what either party really stands for. And if a person is a Republican or a Democrat, that doesn't always mean anything either, especially at the local level. It's much less partisan at the local level than it is at the national level.
Let's go to Luther in Glastonbury. Hi, Luther. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm from Connecticut Voters Count, and I was an Election Day registration coordinator yesterday. But I'd like to say that I'm all for professionalization of registrars, but doing it in one town like Hartford proposed is really a political appointment rather than professionalization. What we need to do is something more like we did with probate, and create offices for registration and voting management that have four or five people in them that service a region. So you got to career path for people to grow and do the job well.
Luther, thank you very much. I appreciate your phone call. Denise Merrill, I have to ask you about, before we take a break, same-day voter registration. This is something you rolled out yesterday here. I mean, I know we don't know overall numbers. How did it go?
It went extremely well. It really is the first piece in what Connecticut has carved out as a way to improve access to voting. And I did see a lot of numbers midday to see, because we really had no idea how many people would do this, which is, if you hadn't had a chance to register and vote, you could register and vote on Election Day at Town Hall. A lot of people availed themselves of this. And interestingly, some in almost every town in the state. So it was not particularly concentrated. And from the reports I was getting, it was mostly younger people, not surprising, I guess, and also problems that had occurred somewhere in the polling, like, somebody thought their name was on the list. It wasn't. So we were now able to fix that. So it went very well.
And it seems that this is something that's you can register same day in the town offices,
yes.
But then you go to your polling place to actually vote.
No. You vote right at town hall. That's actually another good thing about it. We don't have to send people different places. So it's more like an absentee ballot than it is like anything else. And those votes are counted separately, but they're counted with the absentee ballots at the end of the night. And it's a great thing.
We moving in the right direction with this, Colin?
For years, I thought this was not a good idea. And I'm still, I assume within 10 years, you'll be able to vote using your Nintendo Wii system and not go to town hall at all. But I'm forced to conclude that actually is pretty good. And sort of the way people live these days anyway, they live very moment to moment. Oh, it's election day. I better go register. I think ultimately I was wrong. On balance, it's a good thing.
Colin McEnroe, the host of the Colin McEnroe Show. Denise Merrill, the Secretary of the State of Connecticut. Can you hang with us for one more segment, or do you have to go off, Secretary?
Sure. No, I can.
Okay. Well, you can stick around with us.
You've got to go to Griswold very soon.
Because
they are in really big trouble down there.
If you had troubles in Griswold City, you can call us at 860-275-7266 or email us wherewelive at WNPR.org. Matt Dorenzo, the group editor for 21st Century Media, will join us to talk about some of the small town races, some things that happen in Litchfield County. That's coming up next, Where We Live. This is Where We Live. I'm John Dankosky. Coming up on tomorrow's show, ever try to buy a car? Yeah, it's not the easiest thing in the world. Fuel efficiency is in, safety is in, but there's a lot of other things that aren't as easy to find in today's car market. We're going to look at the wild world of purchasing an automobile in 2013. That's coming up on tomorrow's show. Today, we're wheeling around the state in the wheelhouse, and it is our weekly news roundtable. Of course, yesterday was municipal elections, and we're trying to figure out what happened yesterday with Secretary of the State Denise Merrill, and as always, Colin McEnroe, the host of the Colin McEnroe Show on WNPR. Joining us now by phone is Matt Dorenzo, who's group editor for 21st Century Media. We know them as the New Haven Register and Associated Newspapers. Matt, as always, welcome to our show.
Morning. How are you?
Doing well. So what are some of the big takeaways for you from last night? We've talked about some of the towns and cities. Are there any small town races or places up in Litchfield County where the registered citizen is that you've been watching particularly closely?
Sure. You know, and your point about unenrolled voters is interesting. In Torrington, Republicans are actually at a disadvantage in the enrollment. They have about 4,000 registered voters to Democrats, 6,000. But there are more than 8,000 unenrolled voters, and that kind of go with their gut, and they helped a Republican win with more than 70% of the vote last night. Eleanor Carbone won the first open seat for mayor in more than 12, 15 years. She was a longtime ally of the city councilor, an ally of Ryan Bingham, who, like Aaron Stewart in New Britain, won at age 22, 8 years ago, spent most of his adult life as mayor of Torrington. And so voters clearly said they liked the direction that he was going in and picked Eleanor to succeed him. And this is, you know, also has parallels to other towns like East Haven, where the Democrats in Torrington kind of failed to find a well-known challenger with, State Rep. Michelle Cook declining to run, former Mayor Owen Quinn declining to run. So kind of an unknown realtor was in the race, George Craig, and lost by a wide margin. And in fact, Eleanor's, her whole slate, right down to ceremonial positions, all 18 people, all won last night. So it was kind of a Republican sweep. Similarly, in your town, in Winchester, Winstead, Republicans swept into office, all but their town clerk candidate won. They had a very good strategy for an election where people were angry and upset over a financial crisis there related to the alleged embezzlement of a lot of money from the town's former finance director. They ran no incumbents, so their whole slate was newcomers. Their incumbents didn't run again, and so it was a Republican sweep, but you could also say it was like no one who has held office previously were going to vote for.
One of the things that's interesting, and you made sure, Denise Merrill, that I made this distinction between independent and unaffiliated. There are a number of candidates running for selectmen on the independent ticket in Winchester, in Winstead. And if you judge, and you can't judge these things by how many signs are up in yards, but if you judged by the number of pieces of paper in people's yards or gigantic cardboard signs, the independent voters in Winstead would have swept into power. But indeed, that's not really what happened. But there's a place where independent actually meant something. This was a party line, and it didn't do as well as they thought.
And it's the same old story. The signs really don't matter. And all political consultants always tell you that. But it is really, it's an indication that there's an election going on, but it is not an indication of who's going to win.
The independent party, however, is by far the largest third party, or the third largest party, however. And it's not the Green Party. It's not the Working Families Party. It's the independent party. They're huge.
I think people like the name.
Yeah.
And they didn't get like 2% of the vote. They were serious. I mean, they all lost, but it was, they received a credible amount of votes.
They did,
really,
yeah.
Split three ways, yeah, absolutely.
Matt, before I let you go, any other small towns or any other stories that you were looking at from last night? There was this upset in Ansonia where a Republican beats an incumbent. We haven't gotten a chance to talk about a lot of the other places.
There were two big upsets in the Valley, mm-hmm. where a Democrat and the first woman mayor of Derby, a dentist, Anita Degatti, beat Anthony Staffieri, a Republican, and then the opposite happened in Ansonia, where the Republican newcomer ousted James L. Mulvey, the incumbent Democratic mayor. So it's all politics is local. There's, you know, as you started off the show, it's hard to extrapolate any kind of Democrat swept or Republican statewide. This means something. It doesn't.
But it doesn't mean we're not going to try, Matt. Matt Dorenzo is group editor for 21st Century Media. Thank you so much for joining us. I appreciate it. And before we move on here, I want to go to Michael in New Britain. Hi, Michael. Go ahead. You're on Where We Live.
Hello.
Michael, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, yes. I'm Michael from New Britain. And my concern was, actually, my girlfriend just told me that her grandmother had a sticker on her saying that I voted yesterday. Well, she has severe dementia. She doesn't even know where she lives. And a lot of times she doesn't even know who her granddaughter is, even though her granddaughter does live with her. Sometimes she thinks she's her sister. Sometimes she thinks she's just some stranger in the house. She doesn't even know that her house is her house at many times. And yet somebody came and picked her up to bring her to the polls. that is so disturbing on so many levels.
Well, and Michael, thank you very much for bringing that up. And before I let you go, Denise Merrill, I mean, what do you say to Michael from New Britain?
Well, these things may be troubling when you know people personally, but we cannot be in the business of trying to decide who is competent or smart enough to vote. I mean, every citizen has a right to vote. You know, someone giving her a ride is just what people do. So, it is disturbing and these things happen. But that's the problem, that everyone does have a right to vote, even someone who might have dementia.
Denise Merrill, Secretary of the State of Connecticut, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
I know you've got a busy day yes. throughout the course of the day with cocktail napkins coming in from various towns. And we've got a few minutes left here, and I want to get to Paul Tuthill, who's WAMC's Pioneer Valley Bureau Chief. We've been talking about Connecticut politics throughout the course of the day, but you've been following the casino referenda that have been happening across western Massachusetts. And, Paul, a big one happened in Palmer yesterday. Looks like the Mohegans lost their bid to build a casino.
Yes, it appears so, although Mohegan Sun is going to request a recount. This was a very, very close outcome. The casino referendum was defeated by a vote of 2,657 to 2,564, and that's a margin of 93 votes for people who can't do the math that quick. And this defeat really was stunning for several reasons. Mohegan Sun had been cultivating a casino project in Palmer since 2007, and I mean that's 4 years before Massachusetts actually legalized casinos and moved to develop a gaming industry in the state. Polling and a non-binding voter referendum that was taken several years ago had shown strong, consistent support for the casino in the town. But the casino opponents, a grassroots group called Quaybog Valley Against Casinos, really mobilized the opposition, got them to the polls yesterday. The turnout was just an astounding 66% of the town's registered voters. And they made the case, the opponents made the case successfully, apparently, that this big casino with this big billion-dollar casino that would have two hotels and a water park would destroy the character of this rural town of 12,000 people. And so now we'll see. Mohegan Sun is going to go ahead and petition for this recount, or so they told us last night. But this vote certainly is a critical wound, if not a fatal blow, to the company's plans to expand into Massachusetts and, frankly, to protect their operations in Connecticut, which, as we know, draws a lot of gamblers right now from Massachusetts.
Well, that's right. I mean, Mohegan Sun's been banking on the fact that if they don't get into the Massachusetts gaming business, Massachusetts is going to be taking a lot of their business away. We just have a little bit of time left. One thing I say, Paul, is, you know, as we were talking about earlier in Connecticut, if you want 66% turnout, put a question on your ballot that makes sense to people. Do we want a casino in town or not is something that clearly people want to vote about in Palmer. I guess the second thing I just ask you is, does this mean that we're going to see, you know, short of any sort of recount or any changes here, that we're going to see a casino built by MGM in downtown Springfield, Massachusetts?
Well, right now they're the only game left. Again, barring a reversal of fortune for Mohegan Sun in Palmer, and keep in mind, even if they manage to turn enough votes to get this passed, it's going to be close. It's going to be razor thin. And one of the things the Gaming Commission has said they will look at in determining whether to issue a license is that margin of the referendum.
Sure.
Do people really want the casino? And I think you can make the case in Palmer that they're not welcoming this project with open arms. And the surrounding towns, a lot of the surrounding towns, the communities, rural communities that surround Palmer, are vehemently opposed to this casino project.
So this will show up when the Gaming Commission takes a closer look, even if this was to pass. Paul Tuthill is the Pioneer Valley Bureau Chief who covers Springfield for us from WAMC. Thank you so much, Paul.
Anytime.
Hey, Colin, so here we are. So another municipal election down. That was fun, right? Anything else?
Good night for women. New Haven, New Britain, Norwich, Torrington, Derby, some of those towns getting women mayors for the first time ever.
And this is a very big thing. The thing I want to ask you before we go is, what's on your show this afternoon?
I'm almost embarrassed by what our
show is
about.
No, this is good. I want to hear.
We're doing a show about opera and sort of what's opera good for. Big opera companies are in huge amounts of financial trouble. On the other hand, there are all these really exciting, weird little chamber operas and also operas about sort of topics in the news. I mean, opera composers now read big feature articles in New York Magazine to get their ideas.
Okay, so opera this afternoon at 1 o'clock on the Colin McEnroe Show. Our program produced by Tucker Ives. Big thanks to Heather Brandon today. The senior producer is Katie Talarski. I'm John Dankowski. This is Where We Live.